baby back door, baby fall off, sipping codeine cause I got a killer cough. Let me sit sideways in the big bins. Oh, you boys, they my brothers, they my friends.
There's not one guy, one person in the history of this program that's bigger than the program.
Mayfield on play action.
You're listening to Brandon Drum and Parker Thune. This is the OU Insider Under the Visor podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners postgame podcast powered by Riverwind Casino. My name is Brandon Drum. Parker Thune, Oklahoma, 33. Tennessee, 27. They went into Rocky Top and knocked their top off. They came away with the W in a place that Oklahoma fans didn't think was going to happen. I don't think very many people thought it was going to happen. They were obviously not favored. Some might call it an upset, Parker.
Don't mind.
Yeah, this was a huge, huge victory for Oklahoma. They can now stay in contention for the playoffs. They knocked Tennessee out, which is very weird to say. But, Oklahoma stays alive. Going into a bye week where they're going to be able to get some guys back, like, as good as the freshmen are playing, Jacob Sexton potentially coming back for the Alabama game, potentially. Our Mason Thomas, we'll talk about that injury and his play. And we're going to talk about a whole lot more. Tate Sandell, dog. But before we do all that, let's thank our sponsors.
Yes, and that starts with Riverwind Casino, our presenting sponsor. Riverwind Casino has been the OKC Metro's premier gaming destination for nearly two decades now, almost 3,000 electronic games, table games, bars, and dining options, plus the best live music in the area. It's no surprise that Riverwind is always a good time. Thanks also to Janet King, the greatest team to ever clean, and a proud partner of OU Athletics, delivering spotless results from stadiums to any size business across the country. Check them out by going to janetking.com. That's JANIKING.com. And finally, a word from Brunt Workwear. Folks, if you spend a lot of time outdoors, you work a blue-collar job, whatever the case may be, you have a need to wear work boots on a regular basis, you're going to want to get acquainted with Brunt's Marin work boots. They don't take forever to break in. They're exceptionally comfortable. They've got a variety of styles that make them well-suited for any job site, any task at hand. But the great thing about them, they're incredibly comfortable as well. You don't have to sacrifice comfort for the sake of durability. Those boots are waterproof. They're built for the toughest jobs. And if you're a listener of ours, you're going to get $10 off at Brunt Workwear by using code OUINSIDER. Again, $10 off when you use code OUINSIDER. When you make your purchase, they're going to ask where you heard about Brunt Workwear. Be sure you tell them the boys from OU Insider sent you. Brandon, as far as where we start tonight, There was so much that this game had, and there's so much that there's so much ground we're going to have to cover over the course of this podcast. But first and foremost, I want to say this:
the lime green backdrop. Did you see that? It's bothering me.
Why is it bothering you?
I don't know. It's bothering me.
Anyways. It is lime green, which is very interesting.
Okay,
but anyways, so you play hotel roulette. This is what you wind up with.
True.
All right. Tonight felt like the type of night that epitomizes, encapsulates why Oklahoma joined the SEC. I mean, everything about that experience, everything about that football game in Neyland Stadium, that was a classic SEC battle in every sense. And look, maybe Oklahoma and Tennessee aren't regarded as heavyweights of the conference right this second. But man, when the Sooners lost to Ole Miss a week ago, I said on the post-game podcast, man, I think you just kind of chalked this one up to the realities of life in the SEC.
Yeah.
There will be some days, plenty of days, where you don't play your best football. You get victimized and exposed by the opposition at certain junctures and in certain areas. And it comes down to who can make the plays when the chips are down.
Yeah.
Last week, Ole Miss did that.
Mm-hmm.
This week, on the road, in a very hostile environment, it was Oklahoma that did that. And I want to shout out the good folks of the state of Tennessee and the Tennessee Volunteers, because I tell you, Brandon, the bar for me as far as SEC road trips was set last year when we went to Auburn.
Yeah,
the Auburn trip was fantastic. Fantastic. Set a very high bar for all the other destinations that we have been to and will continue to explore over the course of Oklahoma's first 2 years in the SEC. All respect to Auburn, the Tennessee experience blew it away.
It did.
I mean, that was one of the absolute coolest days I have had working this job.
It was amazing. So after the game, a very influential person walks up to me and says,
"Was it Peyton Manning?"
No, that would be. I would have taken a photo with a Peyton Manning. I don't even care. I will throw my media credential out the window if Peyton Manning walked up. Like I grew up on Peyton Manning. That's just whatever. I'm a Broncos fan. Way to throw me off, by the way. Was he there? Now you have me wondering.
Was he there? He walked right past me down on the field.
No.
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. He was there.
Okay. Yeah, you see me geek out when he's talking about Peyton Manning. He knew that, too. That's why he did that. He's just a jerk. All right.
Not fair. He didn't acknowledge anyone. He was just kind of, you know.
Oh, I would have made him acknowledge me. I would hotboxing, man. It would have been, hey.
Brandon's fanboying a little.
I would have fanboyed over that one, for sure.
You know who I'm fanboying over?
Okay, sorry. Anyways, to my point, you got me totally digressed here. To my point, influential person within the Oklahoma realm walked up to me after the game and said, "I'm going to talk to the game day coordinators because that's how you do it." There wasn't any old-time rock and roll, and they weren't hating on the old-time rock and roll. They're just giving it to you real. Like, that's not going to get people jazzed up at a football game. Everything was coordinated. The DJ, like, they were so... on point.
The in-stadium presentation.
Amazing.
Banger of a job.
Yes.
That's the blueprint right there.
That's exactly what they said, essentially.
That is the blueprint. And it helps when you have a stadium that can accommodate 100,000 plus people,
mm-hmm.
most of whom were wearing black.
Yep.
And the noise level was constant throughout mm-hmm. the football game. It peaked north of 120 decibels at times
mm-hmm.
on the crowd meter. Man. What a phenomenal environment that was. And I think it made it all the more remarkable, Brandon, to watch this game unfold and see Oklahoma dig out of an early hole. You're sitting there 6-7 minutes in the game wondering if this thing is going to be over quick. Because Tennessee scored on the very first drive. Cortland Guillory gets flagged for PI. That one was a little bit questionable.
It was awful.
Little bit questionable.
The certainly. Second one was too, by the way.
I thought the second one was the correct call.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he got too handy. But the first penalty prevents what would have been a 3-and-out for Oklahoma mm-hmm. defensively.
And they go down and score.
Tennessee goes right down and scores. Oklahoma gets the ball on offense, does nothing with it, punts it away. Here comes Tennessee. 100,000 strong of the Volunteer faithful at their back, prodding them on, and they march right down the field, and they're knocking on the door, about to go up 14-0, and then Owen Heineke happens.
Mm-hmm.
That dude, man, what a fun story that's been. Owen Heineke.
He's a dog. Yeah.
And he comes up with the strip sack, and R. Mason Thomas scoops it up. And R. Mason Thomas makes one of the premier effort plays in the Brent Venables era to stay. Because, I mean, let's be honest. If R. Mason Thomas goes down there, is Oklahoma finishing that drive off with a touchdown?
I don't think so.
The way their offense was clicking, or rather not.
Second half, if it happened in the second half, I would have said yes. First half, no.
R. Mason stays on his feet. Rumble 70
stays in bounds.
A school record, mind you, a school record for longest fumble return was established tonight by R. Mason Thomas. Mm-hmm. It gave Oklahoma their only touchdown of the first half, and it completely swung the momentum of the football game.
Yep.
Brandon. Now, it wasn't like, okay, boom, that here comes the onslaught. Oklahoma's going to step on their throats now. We didn't get to that point until the fourth quarter. But that prevented Tennessee from just burying Oklahoma under an early avalanche.
Yeah.
Because it kind of felt for a moment there as if that's where this game was headed.
Yeah. Yeah, this game, you talk about ebbs and flows. This game had a lot of them. But outside of the first two drives, you never felt like Oklahoma couldn't win it. That they couldn't walk away with it. They couldn't run away with it. For some odd reason, and I think it was because of the turnovers, it wasn't because Oklahoma like dominated them. It was because Oklahoma, I think for me, the strip sack for the touchdown, Owen Heineke, superstar, R. Mason Thomas pulling a hand, but you know how they always fake it before they get in the end zone?
No, that was real.
It was real. But yeah, that happened when Peyton Bowen intercepted Aguilar. I think at that point, everybody in the stadium knew it was going to be a long night. They knew Oklahoma just wasn't going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it became a test of wills and who was going to break first. And Tennessee broke first because every time they thought they had a good stop or knocked Oklahoma out to where the field goal would be iffy, 29 or 26 walked up and just went, got it. Nailed it from 55 yards out.
29, by the way. You had it right the first time.
Yeah, 29.
You had it right the first time.
Well, because for some odd reason in my head, I was thinking Gabe Salchuk when I said 29 because he is 29.
He is also 29. Yes.
So
the legend of Tate Sandell was born this evening. Holy smokes, man. And he's been great up until then. Right?
Like, Trammell said it's the greatest kicking performance of all time. You talk about somebody that...
He's been around a while.
He said since 1966, and I do not remember the kicker's name, but it was against Texas. 40 or 50 yard field goals or something at that point in time made during that game.
Wild.
Yep. Crazy.
So yeah, Tate Sandell, man, he'd been great coming into this game. He was on a run of 14 consecutive made kicks after missing his first attempt as a Sooner. 4 for 4 tonight. A 40 yarder, a 51 yarder, and a pair of 55 yarders. He has hit from 55 yards and exactly 55 yards 4 times this year.
Groza. That's your
I mean, he's running away with it. He's running away.
He has to be. If he isn't, it's a sham. That is a sham. Groza Award. It's a sham if he doesn't win. I know you're not watching, but if you are, it's a sham. If he doesn't win, it is a sham. It is a joke. He could miss 3. He could miss 5 of his next 6. And he still should win it because he's been far and away better than everybody else this season at kicking. What would you said 18 in a row, right?
18 in a row, which is currently tied for a school record. If he hits his next field goal, he will hold that record. He will have broken the record previously established by Gabe Berkich in 2019, wanted to 2020.
Is there a burrito that he has to kick for a commercial or event?
No.
Leading up to this?
No. And even if there was, no one would let him kick it.
I wouldn't either. That ruined Gabe Berkich.
I mean, Oklahoma won the game tonight for many reasons. But yeah. Oklahoma doesn't win the game tonight without Tate Sandell.
Oh, that's a fact.
How many kickers in America, Brandon, are hitting from 51, 55, and 55 again in the same football game? How many collegiate kickers are doing that?
Probably none. He may get drafted, like literally get drafted. Kickers don't get drafted a lot unless like late. Like he's that good.
There's never been an NFL kicker in the history of the sport of football that has made more than 350 yarders in a single game. Not once. Tate Sandell did that. Tate Sandell did that at Neyland Stadium.
It's crazy. It's just crazy. It's crazy.
And tonight, again, to come back to it, Brandon, these are the things, and we've talked about them for years, even before Oklahoma joined the SEC, before they joined the SEC, excuse me. Once you got to the SEC, and once you started playing teams of a comparable talent level, every single week, the little things were going to get magnified.
Yep.
And special teams is one of those little things that Oklahoma had had so many issues, getting right. Even before Brent Venables got to town. It was an issue in the Lincoln Riley days. It had been an issue all the way up until this season, the issue of field goal kicking. Can you find somebody who's going to make their kicks? Make their kicks at a high clip, make the kicks that they should make, and put you in better position to win football games and not leave points out there on the field. Tate Sandell has done that and then some.
He has been so automatic that anytime Oklahoma gets to the 40-yard line, you're like, all right, well, they're getting three. They're getting three.
Pretty much what it is.
As long as they don't take a horrible – and truth be told, the horrible sack that he took, Mentir took to push it back for the last 55-yard kick, honestly, I turned to Jesse and went, well, they're just out of field goal range now. I don't see how he could do that again. Like, at some point, he's got to admit.
That second 55-yarder, I will say, I was right there.
Oh, that's what I was saying. Like,
I was right there. It made it by about a foot. It was not more than a foot over the crossbar.
But
it got there.
Yeah.
It got there, and that's all that mattered. 4 for 4 tonight for Tate Sandell, 18 for his last 18, 6 kicks of beyond 50 yards this season. He is your Groza frontrunner. Elsewhere in this football game for Oklahoma, Brandon. I guess when we did the rapid reaction, we worked defense back to offense. Let's work offense to defense here.
Okay.
John Mateer is still not playing his best football. It was good enough to win tonight, and we did see a stretch there in the late third, early fourth quarter where it felt like vintage John Mateer was back.
Yep. I call it Renaissance John Mateer.
He made a few throws. He made a few runs that you couldn't help. If you watch it, you couldn't help but hearken back to the version of John Mateer that we saw against Illinois State and against Michigan and against Temple and against Auburn. That was the John Mateer that we saw very briefly tonight. Now, it was bookended by, well, a lot of first half struggles. I mean, he was not in rhythm in the first half in any sense. It was a rough offensive half for Oklahoma. And then kind of the bitter taste in everyone's mouth walking away from the game, at least as far as Mateer and the play of the Oklahoma offense was concerned, was that interception he threw with 4 minutes left.
Yeah.
It was just needless. You know, like there's no reason to throw the ball in that scenario. None. And if you're going to throw it, don't get picked off. Throw something that has a 0% chance of being intercepted.
Yep.
Something at the boundary, something where only your guy has a chance to make a play on it. Whatever the case may be, don't do that. Those are the types of things, Brandon, that can cost you football games. It didn't tonight, but mistakes like those can't happen. Like, those have to get eliminated.
Oklahoma, John Mateer, just Oklahoma in general, they love to – I don't understand it.
Got a flair for the dramatic.
They enjoy – I think they enjoy being stupid because they were – there was a 11 penalties. I think they had dang near 100, right? Like, they had 100 yards in penalties, I believe, close to it. That's every game, and it's always just dumb. Oh, you're driving. illegal shift. Deion Burks, which killed him on the first drive, Deion Burks isn't lined up on the line? Like, what the hell? You're in college. You look over and you say, hey, bro, I'm on or I'm off. That's the signal, on, off. And he's going to tell you you're good or you're not and tell you where to go when you're good. They have to. He's a senior. Mm-hmm. What? And they won. And they won. So I'm trying to be positive here. But my God, it doesn't have, like, truly, I read, I'm trying to remember what his name is, the dude that Outkick covered, what's his name?
Clay Travis.
Read his tweet earlier, and he said, Tennessee blew it versus a very mediocre Oklahoma team, and went on like this long diatribe of a tweet. I have to tell you, one, Oklahoma's not mediocre. But two, Tennessee didn't blow it. Oklahoma had the lead far longer than Tennessee ever did the whole game.
That is true, but I can also see why.
I see what he's saying, but at no point in time did anybody really feel like Oklahoma was not in it or they couldn't win the ball game outside the first two drives of the game.
Sure. But, I mean, Tennessee did commit, Joey Aguilar did commit three very costly turnovers.
But he got hit every time. Like, they were forced. Like, it wasn't like he just airmailed it to him. Like, he was getting hit. Taylor Wine on one of them. Obviously, Owen Heineke forced a fumble. And I believe it was it? Grayson Halton on the other one, I believe. So, like, he was getting killed. Like, he literally... How many sacks did he have? Like six? They sacked a lot. They had a lot of sacks tonight.
Danny Okoye got him one.
He got him. Danny Okoye is awesome. But my point is that I never felt like Oklahoma couldn't win the ball game except for like the first 3 minutes of the game.
Mm-hmm. But it should be noted, and I think this is the impression that a lot of Tennessee fans are going to walk away with. Oklahoma maybe played like a C-plus game tonight.
Yeah, they didn't play great.
Like, they played a
C-plus. What was I saying about Tennessee?
Well, again, yes, and that's where the rub is going to be if you're a Tennessee fan. Is yeah, you're going to walk away feeling like your team blew it because somebody else walked into your building, played a less than stellar all around football game, and still managed to come out on the winning end.
So who's the mediocre team then?
The mediocre team. I mean, I think there's an element of mediocrity present with both teams. I think
for sure, but if one mediocre, like you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, absolutely, okay. And you're right. But that's why that perspective would exist from the Tennessee side, and for Oklahoma, yeah. I mean, there is so much to clean up coming out of a game like this on both sides of the ball because offensively, man, Xavier Robinson got in a groove. And that was encouraging to see. 115 yards and a touchdown, second straight 100-yard outing.
And D-Mac causing the best player on the offense.
Well, I mean, like,
he is.
Oklahoma has figured out the run game, it would appear.
Yeah.
Like, they've run the ball effectively with Xavier Robinson. Imagine that, right? We didn't see a ton of Torrey Blaylock tonight. I know he's a little banged up as well. But feel good about Torrey Blaylock. Feel good about Xavier Robinson. The run game's been pretty effective as of late. John Mateer himself rushed for 80 yards tonight.
Yeah, the QB run game looked good today. I think he averaged like 7.2 or 3 yards.
Yeah, he made a few plays in the scramble game as well that helped that total. Yeah. Scrambled on a 3rd and 16 in the third quarter, which is really, that kind of felt like the turning point, didn't
yes.
it? That kind of felt like the moment where John Mateer figured it out a little bit and kind of got his swagger back.
Mm-hmm.
But, man... The Sooners figured out that they could ride Xavier Robinson on the ground game. In the ground game, I should say.
And probably should have a lot more than they did.
They've stuck with it the last two. And I guess we saw him carry the ball 11 times against South Carolina. So he's been prominently involved in the game plan now for 3 straight weeks.
Yep.
But I think it's becoming apparent he's your most reliable maybe your most explosive option. You don't really think about Xavier Robinson as being an explosive type of back.
Well, that's because because we watched him in high school be so big.
Yeah. But consider, like, he rushed for a 60-plus yard touchdown last week, or 50-plus, mm-hmm. I guess. And he would have had a 40-plus yard touchdown today had he not made the team-first decision to go down at the one-yard line, a la Samaje Perine.
Yeah, he
make Tennessee burn a timeout.
Look, he's been, I'm looking at his stats right now, he rushed 16 times for 115 yards. He probably could have, if they really wanted to, and they probably should have in the second half, probably could have got 4 or 5 more carries, maybe 6 more carries out of it, and he probably would have been successful because he averaged 7.2 yards a carry tonight. Wow. Wow. Matera averaged 5. I thought I flipped him. I thought he was a 5 and Matera was a 7. I said that earlier. Flip it. It's the other way around. Yeah, that's impressive, man. Like, that's 2 games in a row. He's got over 100 yards, I believe, too. So, I mean, before the earlier in the season, you were trying to find a 100-yard rusher, right? That wasn't named John Matera. You got Torrey Blaylock that did it against, I believe,
he did Temple, it against Temple.
Temple, and then he did it against South Carolina. Yeah. Xavier Robinson now, back-to-back weekends. Plus, he had, I believe it was like 68 yards or whatever against South Carolina as well. So he was starting to get going against South Carolina. He, I think, is the game changer that Oklahoma needed on offense because he makes you have to account for the running back, which is helping Matera get easier running lanes when he does his zone reads and stuff, obviously. And their RPO game is so much more wide open. Like earlier in the, I think it was the drive one, they ran Xavier Robinson. He gained like 3 yards on his first carry, right? But because of the game he had prior, and, you know, they were working on him all week, I'm sure, they ran the zone, they ran the RPO. He throws a seam route, I believe it was to Javonte Gibson, right? Earlier, it was Javonte or Burks, can't remember. One of the two. They didn't really get their head around to look for the ball. Had they done it, they would have got a first down the drive, and they would have been probably inside the 35-yard line of Tennessee on drive one. But they didn't do it. It was an incomplete pass. But that's what he opens up. They went back to that exact play in the second half and completed it. I believe it was Jermichael Carter that got it. So, like, yeah, he opens up so much for you.
He's
so much.
He's a great running back. He's a great SEC.
Always falls forward, too.
Because, yeah, man, like, he pushes the pile, always falls forward, but he's a tenacious runner.
Yeah.
Who will absorb contact and seldom go down with the first tackler, the first tackle attempt.
You know who he reminds me of?
Who's that?
Ramondre Stevenson.
I like that a lot. Very much.
He reminds me exactly of
Ramondre Stevenson. I mean, like, he's a physical runner. He's going to eat up contact. He's really, really good at going between the tackles. But also, like, what also stands out about Xavier Robinson is he does have burst, as we've talked about. Like, he can really run. He's also really, and I don't know what better word to use other than, like, he's slippery.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially between the tackles, he's slippery. The way that he, and I notice it, you know, looking through a camera lens, it's one of the things I'm super hyper aware of, is that, man, the way that he can just kind of naturally contort his body through those running lanes, and they are very, very small at times. Like, he's just, he's got a sixth sense for it all.
That's a it's special so natural. Gift. It's a special gift. There's, like, certain running backs have that type of gift, and they make long careers out of it. Emmitt Smith did that. Ramondre Stevenson's been doing it in the league. Like, that's how he runs. Trying to think who else runs a lot like that. Just super patient. He's very patient. Like, Kennedy Brooks was a lot like that, just super patient, super slippery. But he's got a lot more burst than Kennedy Brooks has. You're not going to catch Xavier Robinson in a straightaway.
No, you could run down Kennedy Brooks more.
You're not running down Xavier Robinson. So
Xavier Robinson get the step. He can keep that step.
Yeah. So, like, it's they're very similar, but they're not. Like, he's a lot more powerful than Kennedy Brooks was, but those patient type of runners that just have that knack of finding that crease, that small seam, and his vision is elite. Mm-hmm. Elite. Even the fumble that he had, he cut back to the only place he could go, surrounded by everybody, and gained like another 15 yards. And look, that was a freak deal. He's fallen forward, and the helmet hits right exactly how it's supposed to, and it squirts out. Like, that happens sometimes. But that play, he had zero, like, he shouldn't even gotten 5 yards on that play. It was bottled up, and he did what he did against Ole Miss. Slipped out and took off. He's just special. He's special. I also thought, you know what, Satania played really quietly, had a really good game. 86 yards receiving, quietly had a really good game. Really good game.
Still on pace, very much on pace for that 1,000-yard season. Yep.
Sorry, he had 68 yards, 86 completion percentage out of targets. So, but yeah, still, he's quietly had a really good game.
Yeah, I mean, he's the guy that Mateer trusts the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's yeah. Go ahead.
How many players caught a pass tonight? I don't think there were many.
Five.
Yeah, I would have said five or six. Because mm-hmm. offhand, what? Satania, Burks, Kanick, Giovanni Gibson, or Michael Carter. That's it, right?
That's the only five that caught them. Yep, that's it. It's all five.
Yeah. Well, Oklahoma didn't do a lot through the air. They didn't have to do a lot through the air.
150 plus yards, 59, yeah.
They found success on the ground with John Mateer and Xavier Robinson, and that was their formula for victory on the offensive side of the ball. They actually won the time of possession battle. Crazy as that may be.
They had almost 180 yards rushing, and Tennessee only had 69. That's
Tennessee hardly ran the ball.
No, they tried.
How many times did Joey Aguilar throw tonight? How many pass attempts did Joey Aguilar?
45.
Yeah.
They ran the ball 35 times, though. So it wasn't the disparity wasn't as great as you would think. 10? That's really not. That's actually somewhat balanced. They just couldn't run the ball, bro. Like, they just couldn't run the ball. Deshaun Bishop had 12 rushes mm-hmm. for 38 yards.
Felt like they had a little bit of success on the ground early, and then they Oklahoma did. Was able to kind of figure things out. Mm-hmm. And from there, it was, all right, Joey, drop back. All right, Joey, drop back again.
Well, Peyton Bowen, we talked about that actually because I asked him, like, how hard is it to defend their RPO in that offense and what they do? He said, well, it's how they split. Their splits are so wide with their linemen. Their splits are so wide with their wide receivers. So you're sideline to sideline. He said, but if you can bottle up their running game, you can stop them. Once you make them one-dimensional, you know they're going to throw it. They're going to get yards on you, but you can stop them. Because you can pin your ears back and just say, guess what? We're going to get to you eventually. And they did. They got to Aguilar. How many sacks did they end up? Let me look. Quite a bit.
Yeah, they got home quite a few times. I would like to propose that we start referring to Owen Heineke as the werewolf. Because, boy, he plays his best football at night, evidently.
That's
the Sooners have had two primetime kicks. Michigan and tonight against Tennessee.
Yeah.
And Brandon, like, absolute masterclass from Owen Heineke in both of those games. He was outstanding against Michigan out of nowhere. And he was outstanding again tonight against Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. No, he's a stud. He is.
And they needed it, man, because Kobe McKenzie was unavailable. He tried to give it a go, but it was obvious to anybody watching warmups. Okay, Kobe's not right. Kobe can't go out there. And props to him for trying, but he was just he was extremely, extremely limited.
But he was so vocal on the sideline. I was watching him during the game. He was so vocal on the sideline. He was so animated on the sideline. And after the game, Kobe McKenzie walking by himself, but he's like leading the band. Like he's having a good time, cheering everybody on. Just, but he like a leader does, like he didn't play. So he stayed back a little bit and just kind of like a proud papa watching his watching his youngsters enjoy the moment, which I thought was really cool to see happen. So, but that linebacker unit came up big. They played Taylor Wine at backer some tonight too, by the way.
Yeah. They experimented with a lot that of unique spinner, personnel
look. That little spinner look that they used to do with Dan Cody back in the day, the spinner position, I think they're using that with Wine. It was interesting.
Yeah, there were times when they had three safeties.
Yeah.
They were rolling with three safety. I had Kendall Daniels back there as, in essence, a third safety. Kind of almost just repositioning the cheetah within the defense. There were a bunch of different dudes that got looks in the secondary, got snaps in the secondary. Because at a certain point, Oklahoma was just kind of looking for answers.
They were.
Because in the second quarter, Joey Aguilar was going to work on that Oklahoma secondary. Now, Tennessee wasn't finishing drives. And you saw, like, the second quarter was where Oklahoma got those couple of interceptions off it. And for, I guess it was a very bend but don't break type of evening for Oklahoma defensively. Because when you think about it, until Tennessee got into late game desperation mode and started to move the ball, well, they moved the ball all night, but actually started to finish drives. The Sooners allowed a touchdown on Tennessee's opening drive of the first half. And their opening drive of the second half. Other than that,
yeah, adjusted. And
that was about That was about
bend but don't break. Yeah. So I was just thinking, like, props need to go to the safeties. The safeties, for all the crap they took last week against Ole Miss, they rebounded in a big way tonight, and not just Peyton Bowen and Robert Spears Jennings. Like Michael Boganowski had a well of a first half. He made some banger tackles in like critical moments. One I think was on a screen. One of them was a run. One of the run plays, and dude like made a business decision. He like turned upfield and he saw Boganowski. He's like, I think it was just gonna go down. That dude's about to take my head off. So, like, yeah, that was, like, you could tell, like, he made his mark in the game early. And I think that his energy helped propel Oklahoma. I think his energy actually was a big key to Oklahoma's defensive resurgence midway through the first half. Like, he was a big part of that. So, I give credit where credit's due. Like, the safeties played well all the way across. I think Reggie Powers he struggled a bit in coverage, but Dev is asking a lot for somebody to play those wide receivers and covers like that. Yeah. Like, that's just a lot for safety. So, and Sooners, he plays the run game so well.
Sooners got a lot of young pieces in that secondary that are still learning on the job, if you will.
Yeah.
It was an up-and-down night for Cortland Guillory. It was an up-and-down night for Eli Bowen as well. I mean, Oklahoma's cornerbacks in general, it was...
They forgot to tackle sometimes. I just don't understand that. It was like they had the arms, like T-Rexes.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a rocky outing on Rocky Top. But you know, you've seen plenty of flashes from those guys such that you feel confident with the schedule moving ahead with the three games that Oklahoma has remaining in the regular season. They're going to be able to digest the film from today, make corrections on the practice field throughout the week, and be better on the other side of the bye when the Sooners go to Tuscaloosa. But, yeah, not the greatest game all in all for Oklahoma's cornerbacks. Not the greatest game by any stretch of the imagination. But come back to it, man. Despite the fact that Joey Aguilar threw the ball pretty effectively against this Oklahoma secondary, they tightened up when they needed to. And they finally forced some turnovers.
They did. Three.
Finally forced some turnovers.
Four leading into the game, walk away. You got seven now because you got three tonight. That was key.
First career pick for Peyton Bowen.
Which just boggles my mind because when you think back all the times that he's had chances for interceptions, he had two, should have had two against Auburn, didn't. I can think about Texas in 2023 as a freshman. He dropped a pick. Mm-hmm. I know there's probably a couple more.
Yeah, I mean, the chances have been there. He finally got himself one tonight, though.
He was so happy after the game. Like, he was so happy.
I bet he was. He played great.
So happy. You could just tell, like, it was just like a relief. I think that was something that we probably had been dwelling on a little bit, mm-hmm. the fact that he hasn't had a pick. But he got it tonight. Not only that, he had a big pass breakup on a third down that was, like, critical. Critical. Tennessee was getting the momentum midway through the first half. He comes in and just, I forget who it was against. I believe it was Staley, because Staley didn't get up. And he knocked the piss out of him. And it was so legal, too. He went in with his shoulder and everything.
Yeah, perfectly legal.
Right in his chest. Didn't, like, if you're teaching a safety how to do that, Peyton Bowen is, that play is what you teach your safeties. No targeting, anything like that. It was great. Overall, I thought the defensive line played really good tonight.
That's what they do.
They were really good. You brought up Danny Okoye earlier. Not only did he get a sack, but he was causing havoc. That dude was – I think he had two or three QB hurries too. So, like, he had a good night.
Like the year three explosion for that guy, kind of like the year three explosion for Taylor Wine. You give Danny Okoye another year. Ah, gosh. The 2026 version of Danny Okoye is going to be quite a ball player. Quite a ball player.
And that right there is why a lot of people are afraid of what Oklahoma is doing right now. Like, if you – I know fans, like, oh, this, that, you know. But you see the youth. And we didn't even talk about – Eddie Pierre-Louis, Michael Fasusi, and Ryan Foggia. Yeah, how have we not talked about them? That's three freshmen. Balled out.
EPL's a sophomore.
Well, yeah. He's a freshman in experience, essentially. Like, that dude barely played. They balled out, dude. Balled out. Loved Brent Venables' answer. This day and age, we're going to have to pay up. Because everybody's going to be coming after those dudes.
So, like, genuinely, because, you know, I've said this before, from a vantage point, I often can't really judge the play of the offensive line until I rewatch the game.
Oh, they played well.
You know, if it's great, I can usually tell. If it's terrible, I can usually tell. If it's somewhere in between, generally, if there's some opportunity to editorialize a little bit there, I'm going to cede the floor to you. Like, how would you grade the performance by Oklahoma's offensive line tonight?
I would give it a B+.
Okay.
I mean, look, Mature was sacked three times, so you can't really give it an A. I think two or less, you could give an A. I think anything over two is
I'm curious, because, again, this is something that up in the press box, you're going to have a better point of view than me on this type of thing. How much of the constant duress that Mateer seemed to be under, how much of that was the offensive line allowing the pocket to break down, and how much of that was Mateer just getting anxious?
There was a lot of Mateer getting anxious.
That's kind of what it seemed like.
He had the first drive when he threw it short to Kanick. I even tweeted. I was like, this dude had happy feet. All he had to do was set his feet and throw, and Kanick turns upfield and probably has another 15 yards. Instead, he gets antsy, jumps up, and look, I think it has a lot to – I don't know that – I wouldn't per se that it was Tennessee. I think it was first drive, 105,000 people. That dude's amped up. He plays amped up. That's just who he is. He's always wound up pretty tight. And you saw it right there, because he was like, oh, I'm making a play, I'm going to jump, and it didn't happen. And he threw it short. It happened a few times. There was a time where he could have ran for a touchdown. Didn't do it. And he ran around a little bit more in the backfield, ran around a little bit more, sack. Oh, not only that, got a holding call as well on Foggia. They blocked for him for like 6 seconds. So, like, they're yeah, that to me is the problem sometimes. he overthinks things. But in the second half, that play would have been the way. If that play happens in the second half, he probably scores, or at least gets close, gets inside the 20. So he changed. Now you got to hope that's how it is the rest of the way.
You got to hope. Because I'll tell you, I mean, if we kind of zoom out and we start to look at the big picture the rest of the way for this Oklahoma team, they're right on track to finish 9-3, which mm-hmm. is exactly commensurate with preseason expectations, yeah. at least on our end. I know nationally the expectation for Oklahoma was even a little bit lower. I think finally I was, what, 7.5 was the final win total yeah. over-under in Vegas. So, you know, I think you and I going in both expected that this could be and ought to be a 9-3 football team.
Yep.
They're 7-2. They're 7-2. Like,
if they beat Bama, they're staring right down in the face of 10-2. And if maybe a home game.
If this team can go and beat Alabama, if this team can go on the road in Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama, which is doable, but it's going to take a heck of an effort, mm-hmm. especially in their building. If they can do in Tuscaloosa what they did in Neyland Stadium tonight, they control their own destiny the rest of the way. I mean, in technicality, they control their own destiny right now.
Would they like? Would they be able to play for the SEC? Like, are they still?
Two conference losses. No, they in all likelihood would not be playing for the SEC title. But you're 10-2 at the end of the regular season. You're going to the college football playoff.
And you're probably getting home.
Lock it up, yeah. throw away the key, forget about it. Now,
they home field, right, too, because the SEC.
There's a chance. There would be a chance. Missouri and LSU are, I mean, you have to win those games at this point. There's no excuse not to. Mm-hmm. Those are two battered programs that, you know, they're each dealing with their own issues right now. Missouri, the loss of their starting quarterback. LSU, the turmoil of firing their head coach. And so there's no excuse for not closing out the season with a pair of home wins against Missouri and LSU, which really kind of brings this Alabama game on the other side of the bye into critical focus for yeah. Oklahoma. Because if they can go on the road and win, and let's keep in mind here, thus far, they are undefeated in true road games in the SEC here in 2025. They won at South Carolina. They won at Tennessee. They're 2-0 mm-hmm. so far. If they can go to Tuscaloosa and find a way to win, we are looking at, in all likelihood, unless they screw it up for themselves, a college football playoff team.
Yeah. I mean, this team, all they have to do is go to Tuscaloosa and win.
Yeah. That's all. Yeah. Just go beat Alabama.
Yeah.
If we're being more realistic here, obviously, what you would project, what Vegas would project, is that Oklahoma loses to Alabama.
And they win the next
Tuscaloosa,
two.
And yeah. they win the next two, in which case you're 9-3. And the season.
You're probably going to a New Year's Day Bowl at 9-3.
I don't know if the season feels like a smashing success to everyone.
But still, New Year's Day Bowl is pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't think at 9-3, regardless of what happens in bowl season, if you finish the regular season at 9-3,
with that schedule,
you can walk away completely content with 2025.
Yeah, because
maybe not overjoyed, but content. You can walk away content.
Take it away. If I told you at the beginning of the season, and I said this to you, mind you, the preseason rankings, remember where everybody was ranked preseason. And I said this exact thing to you. I said, you're going to start out 5-0, which means you beat Auburn and Michigan. You lose to Texas. You go to South Carolina, which everybody picked Oklahoma to lose in preseason at South Carolina. And you win. You lose at home to Ole Miss. That's kind of a bummer. You go to Tennessee, which everybody picked Oklahoma to lose that game. At Tennessee, you lose at Alabama, but then you beat Missouri and LSU to close out. Remember where they were all preseason hyped up to be? In your mind, if somebody told you that back in August, everybody would have went, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it. After 6-7, everybody would have said, I'll take it.
I think it genuinely is the first year of the Brent Venables era where everybody can be content with the outcome. Because
I agree.
Obviously weren't content with 6-7 in either 2022 or 2024. 10-3 looks good record-wise in 2023.
No, but they should have won the Big 12
circumstantially,
that year.
Yeah. When you're mindful of the fact that they started 7-0, beat Texas, and then had the tailspin in late October, early November, where they dropped two straight to Kansas and Oklahoma State, and really botched their own chances of playing for a Big 12 title and potentially a college football playoff berth. I feel like even that season at 10-3 didn't feel quite as fulfilling as it probably should have.
Right.
If you'd taken care of business the way you ought to have taken care of business that year. So I think if this Oklahoma team were to go 9-3, and at this point that feels like the most likely outcome, a loss to Alabama, a win over Missouri and LSU, then for the very first time in the Brent Venables era, you can look at the final record, you can look at the final product, you can take stock of the entire season and say, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Three, like, Michigan's probably going to end up 10-2. And you're one of the two losses that they have. If you beat, and look, there's a good chance that Tennessee ends up 9-3, right? So you're going to have, if how we play out, let's say they lose to Alabama, I'm not writing them off. I'm just telling you that. I'm like, after tonight, I refuse to write this team off of any at any point anymore.
Sounds like you're writing them off.
Yeah. Well, I picked Oklahoma to win tonight too, by the way. So
I did not. So, I'll own that.
Anyways, 31-27, mind you, and the game was 33-27. I almost nailed it. But you would still have probably, in counting Missouri, three top 15 wins. That's not bad. Like, that's a season that you turn back, you look at, and you go, I'll take that. I'll take that in the SEC. I'll take that all day, every day. OU still, regardless, they have a tough schedule. I don't think LSU is just going to be a pushover. I think they're gonna give Alabama all they want and more next week. I believe that. We just saw, who was it? Florida scared the crap out of Georgia today, right? With Gonzalez as the interim coach, Billy Gonzalez. So, like, nothing is ever easy. It doesn't matter what the circumstances are in the SEC, it's not going to be easy. Yeah. So,
I mean, nature of the league, man. The nature of the league is you got to be able to roll with the punches. You got to be able to attack each week anew without letting the results of the previous week impact your preparation and your mindset. And to their credit, Brent Venables and this team have done an awesome job of that.
Yes.
An awesome job. Because they had every reason to be down in the dumps after losing to Texas.
Yep.
And they turned around and they blew the doors off South Carolina in Williams-Brice Stadium. They had every reason to be down in the dumps, feeling as so many of the fans were feeling.
Yep.
As though this season was starting to slip away. And what do? They come out in the Hornets' nest in Neyland and deliver a memorable road victory. One of the most memorable victories of Brent Venables' tenure. Of the most significant. I would still say nothing quite touches the Red River Showdown in 2023. That felt like the arrival for the Brent Venables era at Oklahoma. But, man, they needed this win today. They needed this win, and they went and got it.
Just to kind of tie a bow on everything here, I just feel like this team, after the bye week that they have, Brent Venables after a bye, you know they're going to be scheming like crazy for Bama. It's going to be a revenge game for Bama, too, so you have to take that in consideration. But they're not going to have the luxury of 2 weeks of waiting around, preparing, doing everything. They're preparing for LSU, so this actually works in Oklahoma's favor.
The group that's got around into form is the secondary, because if they don't mind their P's and Q's, Ty Simpson will dice them up.
He will dice them up. However, He isn't going to move the way Aguilar or Chambliss move around or Manning. That's just not who he is. That isn't who he is. He can maneuver a little bit in the pocket.
Yeah, and he's mobile.
He's mobile, but I think OU's D-line has a chance to make some plays that night. And wouldn't that be hilarious? Night game, Bryant, Denny Saint, because we know it's going to be a night game now.
Oh, well, so also Owen Heineke in for 15 tackles then.
I'm just saying, like, there's zero chance, right, that they make it a day game with two top 15 teams, right, Bryant, Denny?
You'd figure that's going to be prime time.
Yeah, so.
That feels like a safe assumption.
So, you just got to think that Oklahoma is going to be prepared. I just think the defensive line has a chance to have a really big day that use the recipe that Florida State had.
And here's what I'm going to come back to, man. The SEC is the SEC.
That's right.
And in reality, regardless of how you
feel. They can blow them out too.
Well, and like regardless of how you feel about this Oklahoma team and how they stack up against this Alabama team, whether you feel like there's an obvious gap in talent or coaching or what, like if you're at all inclined to believe that Oklahoma is vastly inferior to Alabama in any respect, they're not. No. Because, I mean, on the large scale, on the whole in the SEC, nobody is vastly inferior to anybody. There are a couple teams right now that are kind of dragging anchor, if you will. Mm-hmm. But man, everybody in this league is good. Everybody can beat everybody on any given night. And that's why, man, like, you know, you take it one week at a time because that's all you can do if you're in that building. But it's going to be every bit as vital, even if Oklahoma can go on the road and knock off Alabama and Tuscaloosa, mm-hmm. that they have that same intensity for home tilts against embattled Missouri and LSU teams. Because if you don't bring it in those games, you will get beat.
Yeah. Like this, it is a league of eat or be eaten. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. So, I mean, Mississippi State, they got to win this weekend. Like, who would have thought? Like, Mississippi State.
First SEC win for Jeff Levy.
Old Jeff Levy. Good for him. Good for him. They've gotten close so many times, but good for them. Well, Oklahoma won, man. 33-27.
They won.
Huge, huge win. Like, this was just like, I can't understate how big of a win this was for Oklahoma and the program and for Brent Venables and for you, the fans. Like, this is huge. I hope you guys are enjoying it. You get 2 weeks to rest on your laurels, and then you get to go face a juggernaut in Alabama. Welcome to the SEC. You get to go to Bryant-Denny State. Your reward is Bama at night, Bryant-Denny Stadium, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, on November 14th.
Yay!
15th. Yay! Good job.
I would have it no other way.
I wouldn't either. It's going to be fun. It's going to be really
fun.
Bring it on. Make sure you guys are with us over at OUinsider.com. All you have to do is go to OUinsider.com, type it in your URL code. Boom. Send you over there. There's a green button that says join now. Click that. You get to choose between just joining or you can join for $1 a week. And get the athletic complimentary on us and on three for a whole year. 2-for-1 deal. Great deal. $1 for the first week. If you don't like us, you can cancel. It's really simple. We hope that you don't because I think you're going to like what you see over there at OU Insider. Lots of recruiting information that's going to be rolling in because it's bye week and that's usually what we do. We throw out recruiting to make sure you guys always have everything going on. Basketball's tipping off this week. Brody Lust, Jesse Crittenton's going to have you covered over there with that. Bye week, which we'll still get pressers and post-practice stuff up. Still podcasts. Everything's going to be going on as normal. However, lots of recruiting intel is going to be going on over there. Oklahoma is trying to flip several huge targets, and we're going to have all that information for you over on OUinsider.com VIP. If you're a college student with a .edu, if you're a teacher with a teacher's email account, whether K through 12, preschool through 12, if you're active duty military, doesn't matter what branch, with an active duty military account, all you guys, think about this. Email us, OUinsider@rivals.com, saying you want a promo code to make sure you get $1. You get OU Insider for $1 a month for 3 months. That'll get you all the way to January right now. That's a really, maybe actually through January, November, December, January. It'll get you through January. It'll get you through the playoffs. It'll get you through the transfer portal. It'll get you through National Signing Day. It'll get you through whatever coaching changes happen, if they happen, whatever. We will have you covered over on OU Insider VIP, and all you would be paying is $1 a month for 3 months. Again, .edu, doesn't matter what school you go to, what college, doesn't matter where you teach, if it's K-12, and you have an email, a .edu email, you have a teacher's account email, or you have an active duty email, emails OUinsider@rivals.com. We will send you a promo code to make sure you get OU Insider for $1 a month for the next 3 months. Make sure you subscribe to this YouTube channel. Make sure you subscribe, like, give us thumbs up, 5 stars, whatever podcasting platform you listen to us on. And that's going to do it for this version.
One last thing.
It is not the last thing. Okay, good.
Congrats to America. The Los Angeles Dodgers are World Series champions.
Let's
go, baby.
Led by the Japanese Shohei Ohtani. So, but still, LA beating Toronto. I guess, there you go. America wins again. All right, there you go. Parker had to get his World Series jab in there. All right, that's going to do it for this version of the OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners post-game podcast. Oklahoma 33, Tennessee 27. Huge win. Enjoy your bye week. You guys have a blessed day.